This podcast is part of Mishmash Media. Hey, folks.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Welcome to our brand new podcast about Curb Your Enthusiasm, Curbcast. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And we are the voices behind Seinfeld podcast, But I Don't Want to Be a Secondary Character. And we are back with a brand new podcast. But this time, Stephen, we're not talking about secondary characters from Curb. Oh, no, no, no. We're reviewing Curb Your Enthusiasm episode by episode, scene by scene.
That's right. A more traditional podcast format. A bit easier on ourselves.
A little bit, yeah.
We don't have to spend so much time thinking about imaginary secondary character storylines.
Yes.
We just need to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm and talk about it.
That's right. A wonderful thing.
It is a wonderful thing indeed. Now, before we get into the episode, just wanted to note that we are actually re-recording season one of Curbcast. This show used to be available to our patrons for But I Don't Want to Be a Secondary Character. And we have done season one, two, and three. When we did record season one a while ago, they were quite short episodes. They were sort of 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm.
And when we got around to recording season two and three, they took the form of a more fleshed out podcast, 30 to 40 minutes. So we've decided to re-record season one in that same format. So this will be more of a standard podcast rather than like a little bonus Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, we decided to flesh it out because we felt like with season one, we probably could have talked a bit more about it like we did. Because when we did season two and three, we were like, this is totally different to season one. So yeah, we thought, let's just do that.
Yeah, so it's basically to bring season one in line with what season two and three are like. So yeah.
Yes, indeed. And we are doing the premiere episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Pants Tent. And this episode, Stephen, aired in the US on October 15th. In the year 2000. That's my silver chair reference for Aussie fans out there.
You get one.
Yeah, that's it. No Y2Ks, none of that kind of stuff.
No.
That's it. That's it for the entire series. No more 2000 references.
Yep. You get one silver chair or Daniel Johns reference per season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, abuse me more. I like it, Stephen.
That's your season two reference. Go on.
Yeah, that's it. I'm a freak of nature.
Season three.
Damn. So in the premiere episode of Curb, Larry jokingly refers to his wife, Cheryl, as Hitler, offending his manager, Jeff's conservative Jewish parents. Since Jeff can't go to the movies with Larry, Cheryl sets Larry up with her friend Nancy, but a bunch up in Larry's trousers creates many misunderstandings. And a bit of trivia about the episode, Steve. In this one, Jeff and Susie, they actually have two children in the episode, a boy and a girl, but in later episodes they just have their daughter Sammy.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those rewrites that they decided. Maybe they just decided to make it simpler for themselves. Mm. You know, let's just have one child as opposed to two. But it is one of those things. When we first did season one a while ago, that's not something I clocked, but rewatching it this time, I actually noticed it before the trivia. I thought, hang on,
yeah, this got is one child. This is different. Why are they talking about two children?
Yeah, but that's to be expected in, you know, the first couple of episodes of any new show. You watch like original Seinfeld, or you know, Elaine's not in the first few episodes, you know, as a sort of comparison. They're always sort of fleshing out the format, and it usually takes three or four episodes to fully get into the way it is for the rest of the run.
Yeah.
They write something and then they review it and go back and go, you know what, we'll tinker with that and remove this and add that. And so only one kid.
That's it. Do you have any other trivia?
Yeah, just one other trivia point. So the movie that Larry goes to see at the start of the episode is called Hard Nut to Crack, which funnily enough is actually the name for or the original name for Die Hard, and it's actually the name that the movie had in some international markets. I guess it kind of makes sense because Die Hard is technically a Christmas movie.
It does. It sounds tougher though.
Yeah, Die Hard sort of appeals to the action side of of the movie, but A Hard Nut to Crack sounds like a family Christmas movie.
Yeah,
which in some ways it is. So both titles are kind of relevant in their own ways.
It sounds like a tougher nutcracker.
Yeah.
It's like a badass mother.
It should be a tough nut to kill.
A tough nut to die hard.
Yeah, a tough motherfucker to kill.
Yeah. Starring Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all the trivia I have, buddy.
Yeah, not much.
No, and there probably won't be much for Curb like there was for Seinfeld anyway.
No, not as much at all.
No, not as much at all. But anyway, let's get into it. Our very first episode of Curbcast, scene one of season one, episode one, The Pants Tent. Larry is sitting on his couch trying to get his pants tent down. He tells Cheryl about it. He says that he's never seen pants bunch up with it, but Cheryl says that this happens. Larry asks if Cheryl wants to go to the Dustin Hoffman film, Tough Nut to Crack, but Cheryl says that she has yoga every Monday. Larry calls Richard Lewis to go see the movie. Richard says he's going with a date. Larry tells Cheryl about it and she asks what she is like, but Larry says he never met her. Larry gets upset about not getting invited, even though Cheryl says you don't invite friends along with dates. It's just weird. Cheryl's friend Nancy calls and suggests that Larry take her to the movie. So, you know, Larry wants to go to the movies. He's unaware that Cheryl does yoga on Monday nights. You know, he's completely oblivious to her plans. And she tries to get her friend Nancy to go to see Larry, or to go to the movie with Larry.
Yeah, to me, this is like the perfect opening opening scene. So it brings in four of the main characters. You've got Larry and Cheryl, obviously. You've also got Richard and Nancy, who is a semi-regular character throughout the series. And it also establishes the dynamic between Larry and Cheryl in that she's quite organized and considered and thoughtful. And Larry's just, like you said, completely oblivious.
Oblivious, and he's just basically takes it as it comes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got his schedule, but he just kind of, you know, he's worth so much money. Yeah. He doesn't have to work hard.
No.
He just kind of loafs around.
Yeah. Like, I can understand him being professionally haphazard because he doesn't need to adhere to anyone's schedule but his own. But at the same time, being aware and cognizant of your wife's schedule, or at least what is meaningful to her, is not too much of a ask, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Except for someone like Larry, who's, you know, quite inconsiderate and quite rude.
And quite a man-child, too.
Like, yeah, totally.
He just says, like, he doesn't even think that Monday night, you know, Cheryl could be busy.
Yep.
And he just goes, let's go to the movies.
Yeah.
And she goes, it's like she says straight out, it's Monday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he sort of seems bothered by the fact that she's got her own thing and it doesn't include him.
Mm-hmm.
Or that she wouldn't cancel it or reschedule it for him. She's like, no, this is the thing I do. It's meaningful to me. I do it every week. You should know that. Figure something else out. I'm not available at your beck and call. And he seems a bit put out. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And also the fact that I can understand if Larry doesn't know Nancy very well and Cheryl, you know, Cheryl's idea is nice. Like, oh, how about you go see it with my friend Nancy? But based on like the next scene and sort of, I guess, just what you pick up in this scene, I'm under the assumption that Larry knows Nancy well. So the fact that they're going to see a movie without Cheryl is not a weird thing to me. Like if my partner said to me, oh, I can't do the thing with you, how about you go with our mutual friend who you know well? I'd be like, okay, well, that's a reasonable alternative. Larry's just like, the idea of going with someone who isn't Cheryl is just strange to him.
Yeah.
Which is strange to me.
And I think
because that dynamic wouldn't be strange to me.
He also says that Nancy's annoying.
Yeah.
So he doesn't actually really like her too much.
That's true.
So it's like if your partner said, oh, why don't you go to the movies, Stephen, with my friend, but you didn't like her friend. He'd be like, I have to.
I figure like a movie is a good situation to hang out with someone that you don't like that much because there's barely any talking. You meet them at the cinema.
Yep.
You might chat for 5 minutes, get something to eat, you know, whisper a bit during the previews, watch the film. And then you go, okay, well, it's Monday night. It's a school night.
I better get going.
Like there's little opportunity for them to annoy you
because
there's barely any interaction. So I think if Larry's got to go out with Nancy and he doesn't like her that much, a movie's the perfect situation for him.
And that's a movie he wants to see. He wants to see Dustin Hoffman in that film.
Yeah, yeah. Unless the person was horrible, I can put up with someone who I find slightly annoying to go see a movie, you know, rather than wait a week for Cheryl or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. But yes, we do see the dynamics in the very early stages between Larry and Cheryl.
Yeah.
Two complete opposites.
That's right.
In the next scene, Larry is heading to the cinema and calls Jeff on his car phone, which I looked at it. It looks really modern for 2000. It's got like the green LCD screen and the logos and like the icons on the screen. It was pretty high tech.
Well,
for 2000.
I mean, like you said previously, Larry's pretty wealthy, so it makes sense that he would have cutting edge technology.
That's true, because later in the season, he has a GPS navigator in his car, which like for 2000, it's like holy shit.
Oh well, for wealthy people in America, it's probably not that much of a stretch.
No.
But for us commoners, you know, we're a few years behind.
That's right. Now it's all on our phones and it's so ubiquitous with the way we travel.
Exactly.
Yeah. Larry says he's going to the movies with Cheryl's annoying friend Nancy. That's what he tells Jeff. Jeff asks if they want to go play golf later on the weekend. But Larry says that he has to ask Hitler, aka Cheryl. Jeff's parents, who are very sensitive about the Holocaust, overhear the conversation on the car phone and Larry is flabbergasted. He says, why did you put me on speaker? You know, it was meant to be a private conversation.
Yeah, the first instance of many, which is the common dynamic in Curb Your Enthusiasm, where Larry says something stupid or insensitive, or sometimes he doesn't say anything that's that bad, but he's also got to manage the offense that people take by things he said.
Yeah.
You know, and this just sets up the classic dynamic. So for a pilot or for a first episode, they're coming out of the gate really strong. They kind of know, I guess Larry's learned so much from doing Seinfeld. He knew what the show was going to be. And like we said before, they do make a few changes, but the show already has its identity and that carries it through, you know, for all of the episodes.
Mm.
So yeah, I like that the writing from the start is self-assured.
It's self-assured for sure, yeah. And we do see Jeff's parents a few times later on in the series.
Yeah, and they just seem perpetually offended by everything.
I do.
And even when, you know, we'll talk about it a bit later, but even when Larry apologizes and they seem to take his apology well, they get offended by another thing, you know?
That's right. Yeah. It just goes off. Larry arrives at the cinema and he tries to go past a woman who was in the aisle to get into his seat. They get into a heated confrontation. She accuses Larry of looking at her breasts. Larry hands Nancy her popcorn as they say that they both agree that the lady is doing the wrong thing by, you know, just not moving her feet. Not moving our legs for him to get in.
Yeah, I mean, at least initially. Like, Larry isn't rude about it. He's just like, hey, can you please move? I need to get to my seat. I mean, I guess he could technically go around the other way. But for her to just, like, shift to the side, and it's a cinema, that's kind of, that's protocol in a cinema. Even if it's not packed, you always, when you sit down, you always shuffle your legs left or right to allow people to walk through. Mm-hmm. So the fact that she just sits there, doesn't move, and she gets offended by Larry saying, hey, you got to move, my seat's over there, is, I'm on Larry's side in this situation.
Yeah, me too. I mean, there's been instances, you know, you've gone to, like, a stadium to watch a game, or you've gone to the cinema, and some people are either, like, pretending to ignore you. Like, it doesn't happen often, but, you know, people pretend, like, not to see you, or they don't move their feet, and you get a bit frustrated, you know?
Yeah, it's like, you've got to be aware of your surrounding. You've got to say, like, okay, you're bothered by the fact that you have to get up or move your legs to allow someone through. But you've also got to acknowledge the context in which you're in.
Especially because you're in the aisle seat. I mean, the aisle, goddammit. What if it was like a full cinema?
Exactly.
And someone had to get in and there was like one or two seats in the middle of that aisle. You know, that's kind of like your responsibility. You have to initiate the move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even that big of a deal. Like, it takes less energy for you to slightly move your legs to allow Larry to slip through or even get up for half a second than to be frustrated. It takes more energy to be angry than to just do the thing.
And then she goes, you know, she basically like semi-me-toos Larry and says, you're looking at my breasts.
Yeah.
And Larry's like, what? No? What breasts? You don't have breasts.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, Larry gets a bit personal by, you know, insulting her breasts.
Yeah.
But he could have just said, no, I wasn't. You just need to move. Like, you're just trying to deflect the situation.
I think he was just getting heated.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I understand. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. You know, it is Larry. Mm-hmm. And he's not very good at backing down from an argument. He likes to escalate. Mm. But at the same time, he could have kept it, you know, non-personal or impersonal and just sort of kept it on point about the lack of moving rather than sort of start insulting her breasts.
You'd hope so. Yeah. They sit down, or he sits down. Nancy strokes Larry's arm just to say, he feels sorry for him, or she feels sorry for him. She sees his pants tent, thinking that it's an erection, and she kind of, it's a bit awkward for her. And Richard, moments later, sits down next to the lady Larry argued with, and he's like, oh shit, this is his date.
Yeah, another classic Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of situation where Larry will interact with someone awkwardly, and then later on, that person will know someone that Larry knows. You know, he thinks it's just a standalone affair, I'll never see this person again.
And then they see him again.
Yeah, and then two scenes later, they're, in this case, like Richard's girlfriend, or like someone's friend, or like a workmate's friend, or something like that. So again, the reliable situations that carry Curb are being established from the get-go.
Yeah.
Which is really impressive.
It is. The couples in the next scene spot each other outside the cinema. Richard introduces Sophia, who is Richard's date. Richard offers to take them all out for pizza and cappuccinos, but Larry declines. Richard confirms if dinner with Larry is still on, and Sophia is awkward about the whole situation as well as Larry.
I feel like Richard's mention of cappuccinos really dates this.
It does,
To go out and have a cappuccino specifically, rather than like, let's just go get a coffee.
We're
going to go get cappuccinos specifically.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like in 2000, cappuccinos were still the biggest deal on the coffee sort of scene.
I think so too, like late 90s, 2000s.
I couldn't imagine if they did go out for cappuccinos and they filmed a scene, I imagine they'd be really frothy, you know, like 80s and 90s cappuccinos where there's way too much froth.
Yeah, yeah, and just like they're in big mugs.
Yeah, exactly.
it's just basically milk, milk and froth.
With a tiny bit of, you know, shitty coffee at the bottom.
That's right, yeah. Especially in America, the coffee is usually pretty shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you can see the tension between, you know, Sophia and Larry. Sophia, like, doesn't want a bar of Larry, and Larry doesn't want a bar of her. So you can kind of see, like, the tension. You can sort of cut it with a knife.
Yeah. Do you think that both of them, like, because neither of them said anything, it's only after they leave that Richard finds out about the fight that they had. Do you think they both didn't say anything in that moment just to sort of spare any awkwardness amongst Richard and Nancy as well?
I'd probably say so.
Yeah.
And I think because we find out in a later scene that Richard's only seen Sophia for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So she probably didn't want to make a big deal out of it in that moment.
I guess, still in the starting part of their relationship, it's still a bit touch and go maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, well, obviously Nancy was already aware too of Sophia. It was only Richard who was kind of in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even Nancy, she was polite, but she didn't really want to go out for cappuccinos either. She was just like, because she saw what Sophia did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true. I was just thinking that I think both of them, you know, acknowledged each other. And like you said, you could sense the tension, but no one brought up the fact that they had a little tiff. I think just to spare the awkwardness for the other two, you know, Nancy was aware, Richard wasn't. But if they brought it up and they got into another fight, it would just be awkward for everyone.
It'd be hell, yeah.
Yeah.
And it would probably also kill the later scenes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would just kill the whole, they'd have to change the whole episode.
Obviously for plot purposes, it's important that Richard finds out later.
Yeah, that later. Yeah, that's right. Later that night, Larry tells Cheryl about Nancy thinking she got Larry aroused because of the pants tent. Cheryl asks how he reacted to it. He said that he felt awkward. she grills him about whether he was actually aroused or not. So she, even in this moment, she's kind of questioning Larry, like, are you sure you had a pants 10 or you were keen on Nancy?
I can understand that. I'd feel a bit insecure, a bit like, you'd want to suss it out a bit. Like, did my friend arouse you? Yeah. Even if it was accidental, you'd still want to know like what actually happened. So I can understand why she, and Cheryl's not too, like, she doesn't grill him too hard. She's just sort of prodding a bit to find out, like, you know, what actually happened.
But do note that in this scene, she doesn't know about Nancy stroking Larry's arm.
No.
She finds that out in a later scene.
Yeah.
So she's under the impression that Larry looked at Nancy and then got an erection.
Yeah. Another classic Curb situation where Larry recounts a story or a situation and he omits some key details to spare himself some embarrassment or some retaliation or something, but then it comes back to bite him later because that person who he sort of lies by omission to always invariably finds out later on, you know, and he's got to explain himself like, oh, you know.
That's right. Larry tells Cheryl that Saturday night dinner is off due to the argument he had with Sophia. Cheryl says that Jeff called to say sorry, and she asks what that means. Larry denies that he knows what it's about.
Yeah, and, you know, Larry's just digging down. He's not digging up.
Because I think Cheryl would be upset if she found out that her husband was calling her Hitler.
Yeah, it's also one of those situations where you think that telling a little white lie will spare everyone's feelings, but sometimes it's better to just be honest and say, you know what, I called you Hitler, it was wrong, I'm sorry. And then there would be no more, you know, by adding more lies to it, you're just making it more complicated.
And because Larry is kind of scared of Cheryl too.
Yeah.
I think he's scared of like pissing her off because he obviously loves her, but he's probably worried about Cheryl's wrath, which we see a bit later on. Like in later seasons, Cheryl becomes a bit more intolerant to Larry's dealings.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably just a slowly building frustration, you know, and that's understandable. If you're living with someone who's just constantly like Larry David, you know, your patience wears thin.
That's
so
right.
I can understand why she gets more and more frustrated and agitated by him.
Yeah, I could imagine. The next day, Larry is in Jeff's office on the phone. He tells Jeff that it wasn't cool to leave an apology on their voicemail. He hangs up the phone and continues with the conversation as Jeff says that he's writing an apology letter to Kathy Griffin. Larry comes up with the idea that Jeff's reason to say sorry to Cheryl is that they couldn't get a pilot done for Kathy. Jeff explains that the reason why his parents got so upset with the Hitler remark is because they had a gay cousin in a concentration camp, which is why they're sensitive to the remark. He asked Larry to come around to his place and say sorry. So even Larry says a gay Jewish guy in a concentration camp. Boy, yeah. It must have been hard for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the oppression trifecta, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or the minority trifecta. You know, you've got a Jewish person who cop a lot of shit. You've got a gay man who cops a lot of shit and a former concentration camp survivor who would live their life totally differently after that experience. It's just, you know, one thing on top of the other.
One of the most oppressed people you could find. It's just like hit after hit after hit.
Yeah,
definitely. So they come up with the idea because Kathy Griffin, she was in Seinfeld in a couple of episodes. She comes into Curb later on in the first episode. She's mentioned in this scene. And they try and use that as the reason why Jeff said sorry, that they just couldn't get a pilot for her.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. Like, obviously Larry was scheming, like, what excuse can I come up, or what lie can I come up with to explain the unexpected apology on the answering machine. The fact that he just comes up with it on the spot and it's already fleshed out. He's already like, well, this is what we'll say. Kathy Griffin came to us to help her write a pilot. Jeff said no on behalf of Larry without consulting him. Like, that's a pretty comprehensive scheme already, you know, that he has ready to go when he's talking about it with Jeff. I think he's been scheming in his head, like, what can I say when I talk to Jeff tomorrow?
Yeah.
You know?
What can I do?
Yeah, because the fact that he comes up with such an elaborate plot on the spot, I don't think even Larry's that smart. You know, he's good at lying. Well, yeah. He's good at making up lies.
He doesn't have that much foresight.
No, exactly.
And eventually it bites him in the ass.
It does.
It does.
The other night when you called your wife Hitler, my parents, you know, were in the back.
Yeah.
We had a gay cousin that escaped Nazi Germany, so my parents are very sensitive to it.
Talk about being ostracized.
Well, yeah.
Gay Jew in Nazi Germany?
Yeah.
He must have had a hard time.
Yep.
What a combo.
Listen, can you do me a favor? Please this afternoon come by the house and apologize to my parents. It's for me. They're here for another week.
Back at Larry's office, his receptionist says that Richard is coming to visit soon, and she tells him his messages he received. Larry is on the phone later in the office telling Cheryl about the apology, so the reason, because of Kathy Griffin. Richard walks in. He confronts Larry. He claims that Richard claims that he is in love with Sophia and could possibly marry her. And, you know, he's an alcoholic. He's got a recovering alcoholic. He's got bad cholesterol. He has heart problems. You know, he just comes out with all these issues that he has. But, you know, Larry, you know, if my friend came out and said, I did this, I'd be like, you know what? I understand. I'd be empathetic. I'd be like, you know, I know, I understand you're going through a lot and I'm sorry. Larry just doesn't give a shit.
No.
Larry just mocks him the whole time. He's like, what? He's like, all right, keep listing him. Come on, what else? He's just a bit of a shit friend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit beyond, you know, there's, I always find a bit of like ribbing between friends fun.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps the relationship on edge.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of banter is always fun. But this is just, like you said, straight up mocking his friend who's undergone like horrible hardship and is still like reeling from that and trying to get his life in order and trying to get back on track. And he's just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I don't care. Like, you're trying to garner sympathy from me. I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, Richard does turn a leaf in season 3.
Yeah.
You know, he becomes more reformed. But obviously in this situation, he's a recovering alcoholic. He's gone through a lot. And in this stage, I feel like Richard, he's trying to find stability in his life.
Yep.
And he's trying to, like, Sophia, obviously, we can see she's not really the most wholesome person.
No.
You know, I mean, she's a beautiful woman, but she's not, I think as a person, she's a terrible person.
Yeah.
You know? And Richard's just trying to cling on to, you know, the first woman that he can find to try and stick with him.
Yeah, when he's saying that, you know, she's really beautiful, she speaks 7 languages, it sounds like he's trying to convince himself rather than Larry.
Rather than Larry.
Yeah. It he thinks that he's telling, you know, giving Larry a bunch of reasons that he should care because this woman means a lot to me because of X, Y, Z. But it sounds like he's trying to convince himself.
Yeah, to convince himself. It's like trying to tell yourself something over and over again.
Yeah.
And it can be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those things, well, those things are true and they're perfectly good reasons to want to be with someone. That's impressive, and you know, obviously she's intelligent, and yes, she is beautiful.
7 languages though.
Yeah, damn. Really impressive.
Very.
But at the same time, I wouldn't go around like spouting, you know, if I was trying to justify why this woman was in my life, I wouldn't just go around listing all of her qualities to my friends. It'd be, I don't know, it's just weird.
Yeah, very weird. Yeah. it'd be weird if you did that to me too.
Yeah.
Just or if like, I said something about my fiance.
Yeah. It'd be like, well, I've just started dating this person. You know, they can do X, Y, Z. You'd be like, okay, cool. Like,
cool.
Good for you.
And
good
how
for
did,
them.
And that affects
how
me.
How is that relevant?
That affects me how?
Yeah, exactly. It'd just be pointless information.
Yeah. I just love it. And you can see that because Richard and Larry, we've described in the past, well, in later episodes of Curb, in Curbcast, as frenemies.
Yeah.
So, like, they're still friends, but they kind of rib each other more than what friends would do.
Yeah, their relationship is very hot and cold, very temperamental.
Very.
I think fundamentally they do have love and respect as much as Larry can have those feelings.
Mm.
But yeah, it is very, very prickly. And like you said, there's a lot of, it's more than just ribbing. There is like a sort of a coldness there as well.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. In the next scene, Larry arrives at Jeff's house to apologize to his parents about what happened. He says sorry to them about the issue. At first they accost him. You know, they're very upset, offended, blah, blah, blah. But eventually they come around. They say, Larry, you seem like a good guy.
Yeah, I think it's a rare circumstance where Larry, I think he knows that Jeff would cop so much shit unless he, I don't think he means the apology. I think he's just feigning humility and regret just to keep the peace. Because I think he knows that if he got defensive, like, because he apologizes, like you said, they sort of push back a bit. And then he, you know, he acknowledges, you know, he has to keep acknowledging why they're upset over and over again and almost make fun of himself. Like, yeah, it was a terrible thing to say.
Mm.
And I don't think he means it, but I think he knows that if he doesn't apologize to the point where they're satisfied, even if it takes a while like it does in this scene, they'll give Jeff shit and then Jeff will give Larry shit. Like, it's easier for him to fake an apology until they're satisfied rather than apologize and then get frustrated over the fact that they don't accept his first apology.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we see everything looks good,
yep.
You know, all's well and good. Susie, Jeff's wife, she makes her first appearance in this scene. In Curb, she calls the parents over to go see the children upstairs because Sammy has got her arm around her brother, and they're like, oh, that's so cute. They go upstairs. Larry just leaves.
Yeah.
You know, we think nothing of it at first, but there are consequences later
on. And that's not an especially rude thing. It's not like Larry was invited up and he's like, oh, you know what? I don't care about your kids. I'm going to go. He just assumes that, okay, you'll go upstairs and I'm going to go. Cool. Mm. Like, it's such a non-event.
Yeah, it is. Cheryl and Nancy are at home as Larry walks in to discuss the pants tent incident. Larry's baffled as he explains his side of the story. Nancy claims that he got an erection and Larry and Cheryl deny it. So it's kind of like an intervention, if you will. She says that she doesn't care that Larry got an erection. Cheryl is questioning why Larry didn't mention that Nancy rubbed his arm when Nancy brings it up. Nancy says it's not a big deal. Larry keeps denying the whole fact he even had an erection in the first place. Nancy gets upset, walks off in a huff, and Larry and Cheryl accost each other a little bit before the scene ends.
Yeah, I kind of have mixed feelings for Larry in this scene because I feel sorry for him that Nancy doesn't believe that he doesn't have an erection because he doesn't. He's got a pants tent. And the implication is that you're kind of like sexually harassing me or like, you know, there's a lot of weight to that accusation, even when he's like strenuously denying it, saying, no, it was just the pants tent. But at the same time, by omitting, you know, a key part of that story that Nancy rubbed his arm to reassure him after the fight, he's sort of, you know, he's not betrayed, but he's done the wrong thing by Cheryl. So, you know, I feel sorry for Larry in this scene that he's getting accused and accosted. But at the same time, I feel sorry for, you know, it's a constant case with Larry in Curb where it's rare that he usually does entirely the wrong thing or entirely the right thing. There's usually a couple of different situations playing over each other.
Hmm.
and in some ways he's in the right and in some ways he's in the wrong. And it causes these conflicting situations of like, well, you're kind of right, but you're kind of wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I felt in this situation where it's like, I feel sorry for Larry, but at the same time, he shouldn't have omitted a key part of a story from Cheryl to spare her, you know, getting frustrated with him or whatever.
Yeah, because that is quite important as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
you know, and he's trying to play it down as well. Like it didn't matter. You know, he obviously omitted it from the original story.
Mm.
To spare himself from Cheryl's, you know, curiosity or frustration. But he's trying to say, no, I just forgot about it innocently, which is, you know, kind of doubling down on the
doubling
lie
down
by
on
pretending
the
that
lie.
It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, you know, if your wife thought that you got aroused from her friend just by looking at her or whatever,
yeah.
I mean, that's... You know, that's a bit weird. Of course, there had to have been something that happened.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean that they're having an affair or that that Larry doesn't love Cheryl. But I can understand why Cheryl would want to give him ask him, please explain.
Mm.
Like, this happened. That's a bit awkward. That's my friend and that's you. And it's, you know, sexual in nature. Like, at least tell me, you know, at least sort of clarify what happened. But the fact that he omitted a key detail is sort of lying by omission. But then at the same time, like I said, he's also getting accused of something that he clearly didn't do.
No.
And there's no room for benefit of the doubt on his behalf. It's, you know, it's one of those situations where...
He just can't win.
Yeah, he's in the right and he's in the wrong at the same time. And they sort of just, they cancel each other out, but they also complicate each other. It's, yeah, it's good writing.
It's very good writing, yeah. Now, and that kind of ends that storyline too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down and everything was fine, and then I started rubbing your arm and you got a hard on. It's not a big deal. I don't care.
It's not a big deal, and I wouldn't mind it if I in fact I did.
Wait a second. She was rubbing your arm.
Oh, because I had
upset. I was upset
about the woman.
Hey,
why
didn't you tell me that she was?
I just forgot to mention I was upset about the woman who wouldn't let me into the aisle.
Why didn't you tell me that when you told me the story? Though?
I didn't think of it. It was so insignificant to me, the whole thing. I didn't think of that.
I'm taking in all the facts.
Listen, it happened. Okay, he got an erection. It wasn't a big deal. He had the fight with the woman with the big breast.
It didn't happen.
Okay?
If it happened, I would give you credit for it. It didn't happen.
In the penultimate scene of this episode, the Pants Tent, the duo arrive at the restaurant Mama's Boy. And I forgot to mention, Stephen, that there was a very brief scene about halfway through the episode where Jeff and Larry are walking down the hall in the office. And Larry says, have you heard of the restaurant Mama's Boy? And Jeff says, yeah, I have heard of it. Oh, I've heard of it. Maybe I should go take my parents there. So in this scene, we see Jeff's parents and Jeff and Susie are at the same restaurant that Larry and Cheryl are going to be in.
Yeah, it all coalesces.
It does. I should have mentioned that before. It was very brief. It was like 20 seconds.
Nah.
Yeah, brief cut. Anyway, so they arrive at the restaurant. The hostess says that they have a party of four because originally they booked a table with Richard and Sophia. Larry says it's just the two of them. They see Jeff, Susie, and his parents as Cheryl meets them for the first time. So Larry and Cheryl go up to meet them. Jeff calls Larry over for a private chat. He reveals that the parents aren't mad for the Hitler thing. They forgave him for that. But they got mad for not seeing the kids when Susie called them up. So Larry just left the house. And even Larry's like, what the hell? Like, he's bewildered at the whole thing. He's like, that literally makes no sense. The hostess comes up to them and says there's no tables for two, and they're not able to do a table of four for two people because of, you know, the restaurant's so busy, full of people, as you can see.
Yeah, two seats to a booked out restaurant is invaluable, so that makes sense.
It does make perfect sense. Cheryl says to Larry that he should tell the hostess that he co-wrote Seinfeld, and that, you know, might give him some preferential treatment.
Mm.
Larry's reluctant about it, but he gives it a go, and the woman says, sorry, we don't do preferential treatment here.
Yeah, I found this like to be an interesting flip of character traits where Cheryl is usually the one that's like very ethical and tries to do the right thing. And Larry is the one that's more willing to be a bit dodgy or sort of, you know, be a bit more, unethical or a bit more self-interested.
Hmm.
But the fact that Larry, like, he goes along with it, but only because Cheryl like pushes him into it or, you know, encourages him. And he's just like, yeah, I created, like, he's so reluctant about it. It was an interesting character trait flip, you know, where I would expect it to be the other way around.
Yeah. Like Larry would try and do it.
Yeah. Larry would say, well, I'll just tell her that I created Seinfeld, and Cheryl would be like, no, don't do that sort of thing. And the fact that Cheryl's so insistent, like, just, you know, tell her and gets mad that Larry is reluctant.
I think she was getting very hungry.
Yeah.
And I think she wanted to try this restaurant.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's already dressed up. She's prepared.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to waste her night and go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably why she's trying to be like,
oh, yeah,
Larry,
yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. It's not a character trait of Cheryl. It's just something she can take advantage of in the moment.
In the moment. Yeah. And unfortunately, it falls through. In the final scene, they are looking at their menus. Larry and Cheryl are sitting with Jeff. So Jeff offers to take them onto their table. Larry asks when the parents are going to go home, Mr. and Mrs. Green. They get offended about it. They think that it's there implying, like, when are you going
to
piss off?
Perpetually offended. That's a perfectly
offended
normal small talk conversation. Like, I went to Sydney last week and every time I met someone who I saw in Sydney was like, when did you get in and when are you leaving? And it wasn't when you're leaving, like, hurry up and leave Sydney.
Yeah.
It was just it's just standard small talk. How's your day? How's Sydney been? What's the weather like in Melbourne? When are you heading back to Melbourne? Stock standard stuff. Perpetually offended.
Mr. and Mrs. Green, they're still filthy with Larry.
Yeah.
After the whole children situation, which is so unwarranted.
I think they're just finding any reason to be bothered by things he says, even if it's just innocuous small talk, like, when are you flying back home? Perfectly innocent.
Yeah. Because even Jeff says in a previous scene that, like, Jeff should drop him as a client. That's how upset they get.
Yeah.
With the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, him.
I like that Larry, by this point, he's just like, you know what? I can't win with these people. Fuck him. Yeah, like, he just doesn't care.
Cut your losses.
Yeah. Usually he would get defensive or, like, snap back at them, but he's just like, you know what? I don't care. Like, if you're offended, that's your problem.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. He's just really, like, casual.
He's just given up.
He's given up. Yeah.
Because he can't win.
He can't win. And he won't get anything out of it, even if he does win their trust.
Yeah.
What can he get out of them?
Yeah. You know, he'll do something accidentally wrong next time and they'll just be offended. Yeah. So he's just,
I just can't win.
Yeah.
The restaurant manager comes up to apologize for what happened. And he walks off. Larry comments on seeing, you know, he's happy that there's a black restaurant owner. You know, he likes seeing them. Mr. and Mrs. Green take it the wrong way again.
Yep.
It's like, what are you trying to say? First, you're anti-Semitic, now you're racist?
Yeah.
You know, that's their way of thinking.
I mean, to be fair, it is a bit of a weird thing to say.
It is.
I'm glad that there's a black restaurant owner. It's just like, if you feel that way, like, he doesn't mean it in a racist way at all, but it's a strange thing to say. Like, I think one should have enough self-awareness to think that if I say this, I don't think anyone's going to think, oh my God, you're a horrible racist. But some people might go,
who cares, he's black, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like why is this even a point?
Yeah, why,
like, just be happy for him as a business owner. Yeah. Why are you making a point about the color of his skin?
As long as he treats us well,
I can understand why they're a bit like, well, hang on, like, what do you mean by that?
But that kind of adds to their ideas of Larry too.
Oh yeah, it just reinforces their preconceived idea that he's a bigot.
Yeah.
Even though he's not. But even other people other than Larry's parents who might not know Larry at all or have no experience might go, I wouldn't assume he's racist, but I would go, like, there would be something there.
I'd
just be like, yeah. Like, what did you mean by that? Like, that's not just an entirely innocent comment.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd feel like there's some premonitions. It's like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I'd at least interrogate it in my head. Like, I'd suss it out a bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. Larry sees Richard and Sophia sit at a table nearby. They're unaware that Larry and Cheryl are there. Kathy Griffin arrives to go see Jeff, and she basically unravels the entire cover story.
Yeah.
It's just completely different.
Unwinds it all.
So, you know, the idea was that, you know, Jeff would apologize to Kathy for not doing a pilot, but Kathy just comes up and says, maybe I just wanted to ask if you wanted to write something for me. Yeah.
I thought it was a great way to end because it just sort of undoes Larry's, like, lies on lies on lies, and he's trying to, like, spin three lying plates at once.
Falls apart.
But the fact that the lie he made up was Kathy Griffin approaching him to write a pilot, but then that happens the next day. I just thought, it's funny.
It's a big coincidence.
But it's such a big coincidence. It's kind of hard to, like...
To believe it, yeah.
You know,
yeah. It's almost, like, fantastical in a way.
Yeah, like, he's, like, you know, he's got precognition or something like that. His lies predict the future.
Yeah. You know? That's a bit fantastical. But
yeah.
Yeah, a bit silly.
But at the same time, like, if I suspend my belief and just accept it for what it is, it's hilarious.
Yeah. And the episode ends. Cheryl gives Larry the 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah.
And Larry turns away and the camera pans to him and he's wondering what he got himself into.
Yep.
Yeah. And the Curb music plays and the credits roll.
That's it.
That was The Pans 10th, season 1, episode 1 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And for those who've never listened to an episode of Curbcast on our Patreon page, every week we will be ranking the episode out of 5 Larrys. So you don't get stars, you don't get numbers, you just get Larrys. So out of 5, I give this, I think it's a solid premiere episode. 3.5 Larrys out of 5. What about you?
I give it 3.
3, okay.
I haven't listened to our original Curbcast recording of this episode, but I think I might have given it 3.5 or 4.
Sure.
Because at the time, this was the first full Curb Your Enthusiasm episode I've seen. Now I've seen season 1, 2, and 3. I've got a better idea of how the show works, and you know, there's much better episodes coming up. So I think with that in mind, I've just downranked it a bit.
Hmm.
I think it does the job of a opening episode of any new series. It establishes the main characters, it establishes dynamics, it establishes, like, consistent plot devices that carry the show. You know, it does everything that it needs to. And one thing I am impressed with is how confident they are. There's not a lot of meandering with the writing. It's sort of, they hit the ground running. And I think that suggests to me that Larry had a really solid foundational idea of what the show will be before it even started production.
For sure.
You know, which is not that common. Usually shows, you know, take a season or two to really find their feet.
Yeah. Whereas Curb basically almost hits the ground running in season 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. No, I thought it was a solid premiere episode. I mean, we get the idea of what and who Larry is, who Cheryl is, who Jeff is. Susie, we don't really see unleash yet until later on. You know, Susie seems quite calm and collected.
Yep.
We see the relationship between Larry and Mr. and Mrs. Green.
Yep.
And we slowly, this is the point where we start seeing the tension between Cheryl and Larry. Because in later seasons, I think in the later seasons, Cheryl and Larry divorce.
Yeah, I think so season they, six they or break seven up. Or
yeah, like we that. Haven't, we're not there yet.
No.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, like I said, perfectly good foundational episode. It sets everything up and it, you know, later episodes and seasons just build on this. If you watch the first episode of Seinfeld and then you watch even episode two or three, if you're expecting it to be more like the pilot, you go, hang on, like, who's this person? That's a different setting.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many different details. Whereas if you watch the first episode of this and then episode two, three, season two, three, four, it's a perfect flow.
Yeah.
Which I think is, again, really impressive, solid writing.
And it sets the foundations for the show as on what it's to become.
Exactly.
That's right. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. This was our very first episode of Curbcast, and we'd love to hear what you think of the podcast. Send us an email. We have an email address, curbcastpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on social media at curbcastpod, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those ones.
That's right. All those details are in the show notes. And finally, if you want to support us, it would be awesome if you could rate us or review us on your podcast app of choice. It really helps with visibility and getting the word out there about Curbcast, our new podcast.
Yeah, for sure. It would help us out a lot. And tell your friends about it as well. If they love Curb Your Enthusiasm or they're watching the show for the very first time, you know, this is the perfect entry point. The first ever episode.
Yeah.
Getting to jump on board.
The perfect accompaniment.
Indeed. My name is Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
We'll see you next week for season one, episode two, Ted and Mary. And we'll see you then for Curbcast. You take care of yourselves and each other. Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Mishmash Media, an independent podcast network. Follow us on social media at Mishmash Media AU or support us on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes.